You're listening to the Pulled by the Root podcast. For more information, visit us on the web at www.pulledbytheroot.com.
Hello, everyone. This is your host, Heidi Marble. I'm so blessed to be with Elle Clausen today, too. She is my co-host. Hi, Elle.
Hello, Heidi.
This is so exciting. This is our first time interviewing together. I mean, we've talked to each other, you know,
sure.
You being on the podcast a couple of times, but being able to be pilot and co-pilot is really great. Mm-hmm. And we have such an incredible guest. Lana Rosenblum is here with us. I'm really excited to tell you about her story and to enter in some really deep conversation about her journey. I would like to read her bio so we can have a little history on Lana. She is a domestic closed adoption person from New Jersey, New York. She was adopted in the 80s and raised as an only child in an adoptive family that could not have children. She entered reunion in 2002 with her paternal biological family. She discovered her biological family through the adoption.com website and message boards. She didn't use any DNA. She has three half siblings on her paternal side. She has reached out to her biological mother two times in the past 20 years and has been rejected on both attempts to contact her and to reunite with her. She is a licensed social clinical worker in Florida working with grief and loss, as well as terminally ill clients. She has helped start a nonprofit organization for first responder spouses in 2018. She has been married to her wonderful husband for 15 years and has two children. She loves to journal, make crafts, and finds healing through music and concerts. Aw, me too. Hi, Lana. How are you?
Hi. Good. I'm doing well.
We're so grateful that you're here to share your story. It's a powerful thing to open up to our community and the ears and the eyes of understanding that are just, you know, revealed through these processes of talking to one another. So
I've listened to so many. So that's what inspired me. Like, I've listened to so many of your guys' podcasts and other podcasts, and just hearing other people's stories has helped me. So I thought maybe mine could help someone else too.
There's no doubt. So where would you like to start? Do you want to take us back to childhood? Let us know a little bit more about how you found out you were adopted, what all that felt like.
So yeah, that part is the traditional part that I think I've probably heard a million times. I was an infant when I was adopted and when I was placed, and my adoptive family had told me as soon as I could understand. So I was very blessed. I'm very grateful that it was never hidden or a secret in that aspect. So that was very positive. It was always a very positive experience. I had the most amazing childhood. I had family that surrounded me, loved me, accepted me. They were great. Like, I never had any issue. It was always very talked about. And I mean, the typical savior narrative, you know, in that sense, but it was always a positive thing. It was never negative for me. As I got older, I thought that I wanted to work in foster care and adoptions because I had had such a wonderful adoption and I had a wonderful family and I was so happy. And I think that's when my mind started to open up to realize that I was very fortunate, very fortunate. And then there were some, you know, some implied messages and some implied things that made more sense as I got older that I kind of pieced together in my puzzle, so to speak. So I had gone to school to be a social worker and thought I wanted to work in foster care and adoptions. And after becoming a social work intern, I found out that I definitely did not, but I did learn a lot about myself in the process. And that's what actually kind of stumbled me upon my search. So I was writing a paper about foster care and adoptions. And this is back before the internet was kind of a free for all. It was, so there were still some educational articles that you could cite on the internet when you were writing a paper. And so I had registered on adoption.com and to like download a free article. They had like psychologist articles, whatever that they had on there. So I downloaded this free article and it said, you have to register for an account. And I said, okay. And then it said, you know, are you a parent, like a biological parent? Are you an adoptee? Are you adoptive parent? And then it said, you know, are you interested in being connected with potential family members in kind of like an ancestry concept. I don't know if you've ever seen their website back in the day. So I said, sure. And then I filled in what I knew, like what my family had told me, and then just kind of hit submit and downloaded my thing, did my paper, you know, had no expectation, I guess, right? I just kind of moved on. And then like probably a week later, there were message boards and it was very different. It was very old school internet. And I had gotten like an email that like there was a potential match or a comment on my message board. And some of the details lined up, but it wasn't 100%. And I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. That seems like it could be off. And then I got another one that was, so that one was actually my biological aunt. And then I got another one that was my biological dad. And then emails were exchanged, messages were exchanged until we figured out that I just had the city wrong. I was a little off because they're, you know, towns, cities up north, they're very tiny. So it was just like the next town over. And so that's how we connected. And that's kind of where my reunion started. I was 19, maybe just turned 20, somewhere right around 1920. That's how I found him and connected with him and kind of started that piece of my journey.
But so how long have you been in reunion with him then?
Your biological 21 years.
21. And he'd known about you.
Mm-hmm.
That is so interesting because often we're connected with the mother first, right?
Yeah.
So how did that feel to you getting connected with your father, your biological father?
It was very awkward. I don't know if as a woman I was instinctually looking for my biological mother because, you know, you grew in their body and that was my instinct. So it was very awkward at first because I had no idea that he knew about me or he, right, was that involved and everything. But the stories that like our family told me as we got to know each other, it was just very cool. Like they were together. They were just young, in love, high school and college. You know, their own families were going through some of their own problems. And so they just couldn't afford to figure out how to raise a baby and get their own lives on track. And so, but every year, like they said, like on my birthday, he knew it was my birthday every year. Not a year went by that his family, like he would be very upset every year on my birthday. He was there when I was born. He held me.
Wow.
That is
rare, isn't it, Heidi?
It is so rare. And I think it's so interesting because when I did my search, and many of us, we always think we just have a mother. There's nobody else. There's no siblings. There's no father. There's just a mother. So I think it's really interesting that that's how your journey started and that it sounds like it was positive for you. But what kind of emotions did that bring up? Because you were very young. And, you know, you have this concept of this protected childhood, this perfect adoption scenario. And now all this opens up. What did that do?
I was still, so I think a lot of the things, and I've heard other people say it, but I think that I disassociated to protect myself a lot when I was young. And I think I did it as a kid too, and didn't even realize it. And I did it in uncomfortable situations. I was very shy. I was the compliant, people-pleasing adoptee. I was very shy, high-achieving, you know, but I was not, like, don't put me, like, in front of people for a big show. I'm not going to sing, talk, like, that kind of thing. And so some of it was a blur. Some of it I don't even remember. And I'm sad that I don't remember. But luckily, I still have them all in my life. So we talk about it now all the time and we fill in each other's memories. But I didn't feel anything at the time. I know that's crazy, but I didn't. I was completely numb. And I mean, I was excited. My friends will tell you that I was excited and we were definitely nervous. We drove. So we spoke via email. And I don't know if you guys remember there was like those like Angel Fire web pages, you know, where you can create your own web page and background. He created this most beautiful web page with this letter to me that was just the most heartwarming thing ever. And I remember that it was, and I remember that it was wonderful, but I don't ever remember feeling that emotion. So I'm sad that I was kind of robbed of all of that because I didn't realize that I was disassociating, but I guess my teenage body was still protecting itself, you know?
Disassociation is very, very common amongst those of us that are relinquished people for sure. Elle, did you experience that too?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, when I think back, and I think Amy and I have talked about this a little bit too, like we don't have a lot of memories from when we were kids. Like you have a certain sense of things, but that dissociation, I only really realized that I'd been doing that this year, and I'm 53. Like, you know, so I don't know about you, Heidi, but it only just hit me this year that that's why so often, like you said, Lena, that you didn't even realize you were doing it. And so people have to fill in those little blanks for you, or you have to, on that intellectual end, say, I know it was nice. I don't remember it being nice, but yeah, it's crazy.
No, it took me a mental health degree and almost 40 years to figure it out too. So
yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I appreciate you bringing it up because I think it helps other people to be able to relate to how the ways that we protect ourselves. And I think it's really interesting that there are a lot of commonalities in that. And so would you say that the disassociation has fallen away for you a little bit? Or what is your coping mechanism now with all of this?
Yes. Yeah, so I've been doing a lot of work on myself. I just turned 40 this year, and that was like part of my journey to try, and I wanted to enter my 40th year kind of whole and in a good place mentally, spiritually, physically, emotionally, the whole thing. And so I started in 2020, so I was 36, 37, all of those years of disassociating and unhealthy coping skills gave me an autoimmune disorder. And I'm 100% convinced that medical issues will appear when you don't take care of yourself. And I'm sure maybe I would have gotten it eventually anyway, or maybe it was brewing, but I feel like it's 100% connected to the stress and the trauma and the not coping and the just kind of pushing it all in the back of your head.
So I'm so glad you said that, Lana, because that's one thing we want to dive into is you know, health, the health of adopted people that have these nervous systems that are just totally ramped all the time. And what does that mean for our health? So I'm really sorry that you had to go through that. And I hope you're stronger and better now.
Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, firsthand too, I've heard, you know, some of your recent podcasts. So it's just so important to take care of yourself and the issues that, you know, come up as a relinquished person as you're on this journey, because it will come back and it will, you know, manifest itself physically if you don't deal with it.
Yes, it certainly does. And I think it's another thing to look at, because I think when we're trying to heal, it really is multifaceted. And our physical body, you can't separate it out. You just can't. So I would love to dive into your attempts to connect with your biological mom. And I know this is hard territory, but I think that the more we talk about reunion and the reality of it, that is very helpful for people to understand. So I think what I would like to know, what I'm curious about, is how did you prepare yourself? And how did you feel when those two attempts did not go the way you wanted? If you feel comfortable, if you could walk us through that.
Yeah. So shortly after I entered reunion with my biological dad, of course, that was, you know, one of the first questions I asked. And he knew, obviously, who she was. He knew where she was. He knew how to get a hold of her. It's a small area. And like they had family, friends that had kind of kept in contact and knew each other, still got Christmas cards kind of thing. So, but again, this is my young attempt. This is me like 20, 19, might as well have been 12, because it was not, you know, I was very young minded. And so I wrote this like handwritten letter, because back then even email was still newer. So I wrote a handwritten letter. I included like a picture of myself. Just the tip, it's the letter, right? Like that's the letter everyone knows. And so I mailed it to him, and then I mailed it to him in a second envelope, and then he addressed it and mailed it to her just to respect her privacy, you know, in case she didn't want me to have her address. Now in 2023, you know, that's unnecessary, but at the time it was appropriate. So, and then he tried to contact her as well, I think on the phone, I think he tried to get a hold of her on the phone to see if she got my letter, to see anything. I did not prepare myself at all. And that was really dumb. But also, I was still kind of disassociated. So I didn't really feel that as much. I feel like I'm like, all right, well, you know, whatever. And I was enjoying reunion with my biological dad and my siblings. So, like, I grew up as the only child, my adopted family, and all I wanted was siblings. My whole life, I just had this feeling like I was meant to be a sister. I was meant to have siblings. And that's what always drove my, like, even when I was filling that out on adoption.com, I was filling it out because I was like, I want siblings. Maybe I have siblings. Like, that was my motivation. So that was the first time. So I was kind of like, oh, this, I have this other thing that's kind of keeping me busy right now. And I didn't even notice as much. Then fast forward, that was 2002, 2003. So now fast forward, it's like 2021. I had gotten, let me back up actually. So I have spent in 2021, I have spent how many years, you know, almost 20 years with my biological family. And we've grown up together. My sister was in my wedding. I was in, my son was in my brother's wedding. I was in her wedding. Like, you know, now we've basically grown up together because they were 8, 10, and 12 when I met them. So, I mean, they're literally like all of our kids don't, they have no idea what, you know, they've always existed to them, right? It's never like this special add-on to your family. My cousins, there's two of my cousins who don't remember life without me. Like, it's amazing. Like, I'm fully accepted and integrated into their family with never, you know, I'm never left out of any of it. And it was amazing. However, in 2016, my youngest brother was diagnosed with lymphoma. And so we all rallied. I work in the medical field. We all rallied around him. He went through treatment. He went to remission. We had a huge party. We celebrated. Things were good. But then we're like, hey, life is kind of fragile. You know, we can't take each other for granted. So then it came back again, and they treated him again. And now he's like 21, 20, somewhere around there. And then they couldn't get it to go away. And it was resistant to all the treatment that they had given him. It was some sort of combination of the two different kinds of lymphoma. And it was, it just wasn't curable. So we spent as much time as we could with him. I made a million trips to see him. And I was there the week before he passed. We knew that he was close, but I had, you know, kids and work to come back to. So I spent as many days there as I could. And he passed December of 2018.
Well, I'm so sorry. That's such a painful thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's so bittersweet because if you wouldn't have connected, you would have never known him and never had the chance. And also the pain of saying goodbye to someone that you love. It's, I'm sure you wouldn't trade it for the world, even though it was excruciating just to be able to know him. And what was his name?
Michael.
Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, we had 16 years together.
Beautiful.
You know, and that's the one thing that keeps me going as I focus on what we had and the gratitude that we had what we did. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I do for a living. I deal with death and dying and grief and loss. And so I felt like I was at an advantage because I knew how to get through it. I knew what was going to carry me through it. And so that was, you know, super helpful. It doesn't make it any easier, but I was working on feeling things. So I made sure that I did not disassociate through that process. But then of course, shortly after, my autoimmune disorder appears, because even though I was being healthy and I was feeling and I was talking about it, it doesn't matter because your body's still going through the stress. And so that's when I started thinking about, what if I have other siblings and it's been 17 years since I've reached out to her, and what if something happens to one of them and I never get to meet them? So then I started to prepare. So I know you asked, I kind of digressed from your question, but so I definitely didn't prepare the first time when I reached out to her, but I definitely prepared more the second time. So I spent about a year kind of thinking about it and thinking about like what I would want to say. And it was not like the, it wasn't the letter anymore. Like, it wasn't the please accept me, you know, please love me, blah, blah, blah letter. It wasn't. I actually found her on social media, and because I knew her name and details. And so I had talked to my biological dad and I said, hey, I'm thinking about reaching out to her again. And obviously he had a relationship with her. He knows her. I don't know her from Adam. So I really wanted his advice. Like, do you think it's too much? Do you think I'm being too forward? Like, I really, truly wanted his advice. And he said, no, it's been 17 years. Like, of course, like you have every right. And I was like, okay. And that was a huge, like, I needed that. I didn't want him to feel like I was going behind his back or that he wasn't supportive enough or, you know, that I couldn't talk to him about it. So it was a huge thing, like for him to say, no, I think you're totally being appropriate. It really helped me. So I reached out to her on social media and it was a short, you know, a couple paragraphs, but it was a little bit more like, hey, this is where my life is right now. I'm doing really well. You know, just a little less like, I still think about you. I would love to have a conversation if you ever, you know, felt like that would be appropriate. I had contemplating putting in like the fact that I had lost a brother and that, you know, but I was like, no, I'm not begging. Like, I'm just kind of giving you an update on my life and letting you know that I'm still open to connecting with you if you're ever ready, kind of thing. So I kept it kind of short and sweet. I put a picture of me, I have two kids because before I was a single college student. So I put a picture of her grandkids, my husband, you know, the whole family, and sent it on social media. And I did it while I was with my biological dad. So he's like, that way I'm here. If she answers you, if she doesn't answer you, like whatever, you know, which was really good. So I was good. I was distracted. I was having a good vacation. So it was good. So I did that in 2021. And I checked a couple days later, message was gone. I was home now. I was no longer up there with them, but the message was gone. She had deleted and blocked me. So now I can't see her on social media. My message is deleted. Done.
Wow. That's
Lana,
intense.
That just hurts to hear it.
I can't even, like, no answer is an answer, but you can't even say I'm sorry, but I can't. Like, an apology would be.
Sure. I mean, we often talk about how there are as many ways to do reunion as there are of us and our various biological families, right? And all of their iterations. But when there's just ignoring and blocking, not even a response, not like, why not just say, I can't go there, Lena?
That's 100%. That would have been more respectful. It's almost right? Disrespectful then. It's one thing if you can't deal. I get it. I work in the mental health field. I get it. But then there's another thing to be disrespectful.
Yeah. Like, why not just, I can't open that up. It's too painful. I've met like any number of just short, sweet things. I wish you the best. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
My mind is blown.
Yeah, same. And I think that's why I know it's such a painful thing to sit in this memory with us, but it's so important for other people that are feeling this kind of rejection because it is common to be rejected in lots of different ways. And it just goes right to the bone of your soul. Just to that very deepest part. It's like this laceration. And no matter how old we are, how accomplished we are, there's something about that relationship that's supposed to be the most protective, loving relationship. It's a mind F, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It's really difficult. I know that's probably not a medical health term, but I think it should be.
It absolutely is.
It is now.
I'm putting it in the dictionary.
A whole other textbook.
Yeah.
So it's just mind blowing. And you wonder in those situations, what is going on with her? You know, it's something to really be curious about because, you know, I'm not a pro, but I can tell you it's not about you.
And I think that's what helped me in the end, because I had tried to be take a step forward and work on my healing. And that, of course, kind of threw me back a little bit, but fair. But then I realized in the end, like, things have lined up. Like, I started to be more like, trust the universe and just trust, like, the way, like, when I start looking back at life and how things have happened, like, everything has fallen into place. Things have, stars have aligned, coincidences that aren't coincidences have aligned, you know, like, things have been. And I said, you know what, if the universe really meant for us to be connected, then it would have happened, whether it's your higher power, whatever it is. But like, as I was turning 40, I said, that's it. I'm taking back my birthday. I'm not going to be sad on my birthday. Like, I'm going to do things for me. And if the universe aligns and something great happens, great. If it doesn't, then I don't need someone who's not ready to deal with it. I'm already taking care of my own family, my adoptive parents who are elderly. You know, I'm not taking care of them, but I'm supporting my family who lost our brother, you know, and we've dealt with grief over the last 5 years. And so I already feel like I'm juggling plenty. I don't need someone who can't deal with it, who can't be mature enough to have a conversation, who's going to pull me into some pit of unhealthiness, you know, mentally. I can't do that right now. Like, I deserve more than that. And so that's kind of what took me through that. That's kind of how I made it on the other side of that. So if it's meant that we're ever meant to be, the universe will line it up for me somehow. I'm not, like, that's how I got my peace. And I just am so passionate because I know other people, like, can get there. You'll get that peace. You have to just, like, the harder I work for it, the more things would literally fall into my lap. Like, I started reading. I talked to a therapist. I started reading, like, adoption books. I dipped my toe in social media very carefully because I couldn't overwhelm. The same thing with the book. Like, I would read an adoption book, then I'd read, like, a fun romantic comedy, whatever, you know, like, heck, even a horror mystery would probably be
sometimes less. Those are better.
I was gonna say adoption
scary movie
King. I don't know, they're both horrifying. Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Oh man.
Oh, but then true. Like, things would literally fall. So completely randomly, I love music, and music was part of my healing journey too. Like, I had actually spoken with, like, an adoptee coach as well, as I was kind of in this journey towards my birthday. And, like, there's things that I forgot that were really important to me when I was young, and things that I just was like, oh my gosh. So I was like, music is so important. And she's like, well, why don't you try and take a journey through music to help your, you know, help yourself. And I was like, oh my gosh. So then I started reading books about music and, like, memoirs from music artists. And I stumbled upon Mary Gaucher, who I did not know until I got halfway through her book, was adopted. And I almost had a heart attack that the universe just threw that book into my reading list from the library.
Yes.
Like,
yes. And her, like, project around her adoption, yes, with the pieces that she wrote, stunning.
Mine was blown. Yeah. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh. So then from there, like, literally it was a rabbit hole. So then I found, and I don't know if you guys have ever heard it or seen it, there's a playlist from Anne Heffron on Spotify called You Don't Look Adopted.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good.
There's a whole playlist, and anybody that submits songs to her, she adds, like, to this playlist, any song that reminds you of being adopted or being relinquished or... So then I'm like, oh my gosh. So now I'm on this playlist and I'm finding these songs. I mean, it was just... And then I found... Ferreira Swan, have you ever heard of her? Mm-hmm. I found her, and that song was that was my second attempt at, you know, reunion with my biological, that was my song. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so through all of these things literally fell into my lap. Like, it was so crazy. And so I was like, you know what? I need to just trust the universe and just let it finish me on that journey. And so it was awesome. So, you know, I mean, I kept reading, I kept doing work, I kept trying to feed my body healthy food. I've been journaling again. I used to love to, like, I don't know, I guess it's a self-expression thing. I now realize I felt very misunderstood and disconnected from my adoptive family when I was a child, not because of anything that they did or didn't do, just because I felt it, right? And I used to like to cut words out and make collages and stuff when I was young out of magazines and stuff, because I felt like I was expressing myself and who I was, and I would paste them all around my room. So now I'm like, well, I'll journal and I'll use art and journaling and, you know, scrapbooking to to kind of help. And then I've remembered how much I loved that because it was a way for me to express myself. And so I literally have just kind of gone backwards to like remembering the things that I love to do. And they've actually ended up helping me now, which is really.
That's so powerful, Anna. I have a few things I'd like to dig into. So when you were talking about your childhood, and I think there are a lot of adopted parents we hope that we can reach that can understand more and be able to do more for the children that they have in their care. And that's one of my missions too, is educating. So what would you say to adopted parents that could help the children that they have right now to have the ability to express, even though they're doing a quote, good job? I don't know if that's a difficult question, but I feel it's really important.
Yeah, I agree. I think even in my generation, I'm kind of the tail end of it, but they didn't know better. Like they only knew what they knew, right? So if we could tell them what they need to know now to be more successful and be more helpful, you know, there's so much more information out there now. But yeah, I think listening, not like putting down their hobby because it's not your family's hobby or what your family's passionate about, right? And talking about it more, not letting it be taboo, like to talk about it, right? Like, it was never shameful or a horrible thing, but not my parents, but someone in my family had said to me when I was a teenager, and I know it was meant well. I was a teenager, I had a boyfriend. They were nervous because I was a teenager with a boyfriend. And someone in my family said, well, you don't want to end up like your biological mother, do you?
Oh, like, oh my God. I'm sorry. I just can't.
Time out.
Whoa. Okay. You know,
so don't say that.
Yeah. Don't say that.
Don't
write that down, people.
That one, just full stop. Don't. Mm-hmm. I know you are being so gracious, and that is so lovely of you. You know that people were doing their best and things like that. And I think so often, because the experience is supposed to be one that is just positive and loving, and look at your life. And you even said you had a lovely, you know, childhood and all that sort of stuff. No one thinks about what they're saying in terms of the fact that you are still other. Are you theirs? Yes, but it is on paper. You are accepted into a stranger's family. We are adopted by strangers, and no amount of, I think the universe intended us to be together. No, sorry. That's not a thing.
Yeah. When I said trust the universe, that was not part of
it. Yeah. Right. But like, you know, and I grew up in a religious background, so no, God didn't put me in the wrong person to be adopted by this person. Like let's stop the mental backflips to mm-hmm. justify, but to the adopting families, parents, aunts, uncles, anyone who's involved, just think before you say some things out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because, you know, right? Because we, as little people or teenagers, there's only so much we can even process at those times. Like little adoptees don't know they're dissociating. Mm-hmm. And if you do have a nice relationship with your parents, like it sounds you did, you were still hurting. You still realized years later you were dissociating. It wasn't that you had nice parents and so you were all clear. No. Yeah. No. And so just careful. Careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think not being afraid to listen or to say, like, if someone says they're upset or someone says they don't feel connected or someone says they feel a certain, you know, an adoptee saying that, like, yeah, it might be uncomfortable for you, but sometimes you have to sit in that uncomfortable because guess what? We live there.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
Well, it's so true. Was applauding.
I am applauding. Well, and I think it's so hard to talk about these things, you know, especially when people's intentions are good, but we have to understand the psychological consequences behind behind all of this, which are far, far reaching, very far reaching. Yeah.
I think I've said it before, so sorry, everyone listening, but you know, we don't even separate puppies and kittens too early because we know they grow up with bad behaviors or anxiety, like little animals with anxiety and food scarcity issues, et cetera, et cetera. And yet the idea that a human baby can be separated from its source of being, put with strangers and not experience any adverse effects physically, mentally, emotionally, it's garbage. And no amount of wanting a child makes that child able to skip those developmental problems. And so I'm so grateful, Lena, that you're here sharing this, because I think so often people use the excuse of, well, I know this young woman named Lena and she's fine. Right?
I love that one. Oh yeah, they're fine. Oh, okay. And I mean, I feel good now, but it was a huge journey to get there.
Yeah. And you've had to work really hard. And, you know, I love to have takeaways from the podcast too, and the work you do. I'd really love to talk about that. I'm really interested, A, in how you got involved in this type of work and how it has helped heal your own life as you're working toward that process. One of the things before we dive into that too, I love how you were talking passionately about your worthiness, that you deserve to heal, that you're fighting and you're putting up boundaries. That is very hard for most of us to do. So thank you for sharing your passion about that. That's really a big deal. And I think also finding ways to express through listening to music, that's very accessible for people. And journaling is very accessible. So, you know, I'm covering a lot of ground there, but if you can just talk about your work and like what that means to you and how it relates to the issues surrounding adoption loss, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So to add to your worthiness comment, I had a couple people that like, I think helped me get to that hump of it. Like my biological dad said one time, and I don't know why, but it clicked. He said, "You didn't have to be in this situation. So why are you the one who has to suffer because of it? Like what? You didn't ask to be here." And I was like, oh, and not that I've never read it, but I don't know, for some reason when he said it, I was like, oh, I was like, you're right. And that really helped, because none of us did. None of us asked to be here. We're just here navigating it the best we can. And that's what really helped with that feeling of like worthiness, and that, well, hey, guess what? I deserve to have the life that I want to have too, and not to be held back by these, you know, these things or these issues or her unwillingness to face reality. So that's kind of where I took that comment from him and a few other people and a few, you know, social media people that I've seen, like, you know, post similar things. And I kind of just, every time I saw them, I would just be like, okay, put that on the background as my wallpaper for, you know, for a week, because I just need to remind myself of that, you know, and that really helped. So my current job, I work with, grief and loss and terminally ill clients. Once I realized I didn't want to do foster care and adoptions, I pivoted towards medical, because my boyfriend, now husband, was an EMT. And so I wanted to work in the hospital, because I thought, oh, then I'd get to see him because he'll be coming to the hospital. But again, the universe had other ideas. So I ended up working in the hospital and doing just kind of regular discharge planning, case management, social work, as I got my other degrees and my license and stuff. And I had seen this team that does what I do. I work in palliative care. I had seen this team that did what I do, and I watched them go into a room and I watched them leave the room, and you could feel the temperature and the energy of the room change. Like, I can't explain it, because it's like one of those goosebumps moments. Like literally they opened the door and like a different temperature came out. And so I was like, that's it. I saw it and I said, that's what I'm going to do with my life. Like, I want her job. I want to do that. Now she's my boss and she's the best human being in the world. So luckily the place expanded, the teams expanded, and we have like multiple teams across the state that we staff. So I was able to get on that team. Eventually, it took, when I saw that, it took me probably 6 years. But again, so now it's a year after my brother's diagnosed. I now get on this team that works with death, dying, end of life, grief, and loss. And I was like, oh, guess the universe knew I needed to be here, because when he got really sick, there was never a question like, you need to go be with your family. Like, there was never a no, you don't, you know, you can't take that day off. Like, it was always like, how can we help you? How do we support you? Because we want you to come back and still do this job, which we know is heavy, and you're going through something heavy. So whatever we can do to help you kind of balance that, like, they were super supportive. And so then actually a year after he passed, I won an award at work for like an outstanding performance award for my role, which was, I mean, it was amazing to be acknowledged. I was very humbled and very grateful that they realize what we do and how hard it is. And so, of course, I dedicated that to him, and I kind of spoke about him in my award speech, which was really special to be able to, you know, have that as a memorial kind of for him. And then I was like, I don't know, do I really want to do this? Because this is like putting a knife in it over and over again some days. But I have a really great team. I don't work alone. I have a really great group of women who I work with who are strong and very wonderful. And we know, like, if someone's struggling with this case, we pick up the slack, or if someone can't be there during something, we go, you know, so we're really good at complementing each other in that aspect. And it's helped me personally, because I realized, and I have friends, the universe has also, by the way, put like probably almost a dozen adoptees in my life in random ways that I run into and meet and, you know, just know. But it helped me kind of process, and I've talked with others, my friends, about it, that a lot of what we're dealing with is grief and loss. Like, yes, it's trauma, 100%, it's trauma, but there's so much grief and loss of, you know, what your life could have been, would have been, loss of the relationship that you could have but can't because they reject you, or they're deceased by the time that you find them. I mean, it's all grief and loss. It's all related. And I was just like, oh, it's like, this all makes sense. Like, things just click. Like, and that I think helps me too, because I process it more like grief and loss versus like me being a victim or me being wronged or me being injured. I process it as grief, and I know how to do that because I do that for a living. And so it makes it manageable, I guess.
Yeah, that's really powerful, because I wondered, does that give you a sense of urgency or a sense of peace about your own healing? Because I know when people around me are sick or I get sick, all of a sudden, it's just like, is there going to be enough time to find the peace that I think we all desire, you know?
Yeah, I think it makes me live my life a little more urgently. So I don't turn down opportunity to spend with family, or I make sure that we work hard and we play hard, you know? So I think if nothing else, it grounds me, and it makes me realize that the little moments are actually the big moments. And it makes me even more grateful for everything that I have, everything that I had, like all of it. Like, it makes sense. Like, I know there are people who, if you were there with someone when they passed, you'd be exhausted. You'd be in bed for a week. Like, you know, I feel energized and empowered by the fact that I was so lucky to be on this journey with them and to ease their journey in whatever way I might have been able to help, you know, even if it was some silly way. Like, sometimes they ask for like a slice of pizza and we'll go down to the store and get pizza because the hospital pizza is really bad. You know, like, whatever we can do. You want wine on your little swab stick? I don't care. Have your family bring in some wine. We will swab your mouth with wine. So just those little things that can make it, you know, a little bit more peaceful, but it definitely does. So I try not to let myself get too depressed or too anxious to live my life, right? And I try to recognize when that's happening to get myself help to do what I need to do, because I want to live my life. I want to make memories. So I think I definitely focus more on making memories, taking photos. I'm like a photo freak whenever I'm with any of my family. We're always taking photos because I realize how important it is to capture those memories too.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
The grief and loss part struck me because I've been hearing more about that in other adoptee conversations as well. And I don't think we've scratched the surface of that yet as adoptees or as adopting families recognizing, because they're so excited for the most part. I think most adopting parents are excited to have this child that they've been waiting for whatever reason, whether it was infertility or they always wanted a girl, you know, whatever. So they don't see the grief and loss, right? They gained. And so we're not allowed to even acknowledge there is nothing. We didn't lose anything. We just gained. So the loss is always shoved aside. So I love that you, with your clinical background, can say here for everyone listening, there is grief and loss in our adoptee lives that started right at the beginning. And I've been reading more and running into things like, you know, that depression can often be unacknowledged grief. And that is something that only also just hit me this year. I was 53. I was this many years old when I found out that maybe my depression wasn't just a pathologizing of, well, my chemicals are weird. And so this, you know, but that I had never been allowed to process grief and loss. And that made so much more sense than that sort of nebulous, I'm depressed, I don't know why, I have great kids, I live in a ski town, what's wrong with me, right? And I think, I don't know about you, Heidi, but I think many of us can sort of relate to that. But the moment you realize, I've never been allowed to grieve because you're supposed to just be happy and grateful. No, I think that's huge, Lena. I thank you so much for saying that out loud here.
No, and I appreciate that too, because the thing that it's really easy to slip into victimhood in this situation. And that's not a power stance. We were victimized. I mean, yes, you could define it that way, but how do we heal our way out of that? And if we could just talk about, you know, just your journaling and the music, just for a moment, just to give people something they can touch that's small, because I think when you think about how am I going to heal this massive amount of pain, tell me, like, when you open up your journal, if you don't mind being personal about it, what is it that you're pouring into it? Like, can you give us an example of how often you're doing this and what does it do for you? And why do you think it's important for people to express in this way?
Yeah, of course. So sometimes I love quotes too. Besides music, I love quotes. So sometimes I will find like a quote online or, you know, on social media or somewhere, and I might share it to my Instagram story. So then at the end of the night, I'll sit down, I'll take that quote, I'll write it down in my journal, and then I'll write my thoughts. Like, what did it make me feel? What did it make me think about? And sometimes that helps me kind of process whatever that quote was about for me, like a piece of my puzzle or a piece of grief or a piece of whatever it might be. And then I actually started a music journal where I take songs and I write about what they make me think, how they make me feel. And there are some like preset ones you can find on Etsy and Google of, you know, kind of blank writing formats. Prompts,
like writing prompts. Yeah.
Yeah. Like kind of a setup to like name the song, name the title, yeah, and then like space to write kind of thing. And then I do like, I will Google writing prompts if I'm really desperate, and I'll like print them all out and then I'll just cut them out and stick them onto my journal and then write below it. I don't do it every day. I wish I did. I try to do it 4 to 5 times a week, which I feel is a win. And then I did a special journal for when I turned 40. So I counted down the 40 days to my 40th birthday. So that was a big project for me. I did it every day for 40 days. And I went through like my 40 favorite quotes, my 40 favorite songs, my 40 favorite memories, 40 people who impacted my life. Like, it was a big reflection for me. And I really loved doing it. And I decorated washi tape, stickers, whatever, you know, like just because I love crafty stuff. So that's, you don't have to decorate. You could doodle, you could just write, you know, it doesn't have to be, but that's what worked for me. That's what I really enjoyed doing. And that was really helpful as well. But it doesn't always have to be negative too. You know, I sprinkle in gratitude journaling in between too. So if I don't have a quote that day, or if I don't have a song that day that was stuck in my head, I'll do gratitude journaling. Just, you know, finding five things that I'm grateful for, or five things that I like about myself. And you know how hard it is to find five things that you like about yourself when you don't like yourself? It's a lot. And if you do it over and over, then it becomes so much easier. It becomes that second nature. If you can do that for like a month, it's so much easier. But it's, your brain is a muscle, right? Like, you have to train it to think the way that you want it to, because if not, if left to its own devices, forget it. You know, you're going straight down into that spiral of, you know, depression and self-loathing, whatever your spiral might be. Everyone's looks different, right? But not feeling good enough, unworthiness, whatever it is, if you don't use that muscle to help teach yourself those things, it won't automatically do it for you. And it doesn't mean that something's wrong with you. It just means that you haven't used that muscle.
I completely agree with you. You know, I was thinking about the other day, because I feel like there's a thin membrane between I'm doing okay, and then one little thing or happen is like, boom, and then woo, 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 there goes the spiral, and I can feel myself. And I'm just like, seriously, I'm going to counseling twice a week. Why can't I manage myself? It's really hard. I think you are really hard on yourself a lot. A lot of us are, and that's just not adopted people. But I think what you said about working toward really trying, even if it's hard, to find those things that we like about ourselves, and almost just force feed it until it becomes something that's actually nourishing to our body, because it's so much easier to do the negativity, because we feel abandoned and rejected at the core. So it's easier to abandon and reject ourselves a lot of the time. And I think it has to start somewhere with our own worthiness. And I would hope, because I'm knocking on 59 years old, that this is a cautionary tale to start younger, you know. And I would just love to know if there's anything else that you and Elle want to discuss, anything that you feel is important that you want other adopted people or anyone else in the constellation to know, to understand. Just want to open up the floor to that.
So I think for me, one of the things, and I've heard it, but I haven't heard it a ton, so I think that a huge takeaway, especially for adopted parents, is that if adoptees are curious about their biological roots or their families or their family tree or where they came from, it's not because they're rejecting one and choosing one, right? We literally have four parents, right? When you're divorced and you have step parents, they want you to respect and consider those people a part of your family too. So we literally have two sets of parents. And however we navigate that and figure that out should be respected, because we didn't ask to have two sets of parents. Here we just are. And so for me, that's a huge, like, that would be the last piece of advice that I think would be helpful for, you know, adoptive parents, to say, oh yeah, you can have more than one set of parents. Like, you don't just have to choose or have one or the other, and be respectful of however we navigate that and make it work in our lives, I think.
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah. And I think I would add on to that. So I have a couple of thoughts, but just to add on to that, you know, sometimes sometimes I hear of stories where the adopted person was taken to therapy by their adopting parents and all that sort of stuff. And that's good. We need that. And I think had I had something like that much earlier in my life, that would have been so helpful. I'm not saying it would have made everything perfect or better, but I think I would just be further along. You know, Heidi, you were saying I'm 59, you know, and like, I'm 53, and Lena, you're 40. Like, if the younger and younger we can reach, that things can start to be worked through earlier. That's cool. I'm so glad. But adopting parents, you need therapy too, because there are losses there that haven't been dealt with, right? Or disappointments or lack of mirroring for them as well. It's not like you can look into your adopted person's face and see your genetic background either. Like, I just think it's complicated and everybody could use some counseling. But so that's my first thing. The second is that I don't know exactly how dark it is where you guys are, but I'm pretty far north, and I'm not even that far north in Canada as far as that goes. But it's really dark, and it got dark before 5 o'clock. It's winter solstice today. It's the darkest, longest night of the year in the northern hemisphere. And that is, I'm not a particularly spiritual person anymore, but one of my favorite teachers, Alexander Shaya, said once, because he really goes about studying and teaching about Celtic Christianity and that sort of Celtic pagan way of looking at the world, that you need to decorate the darkness, right? And so when I think about the music that you were treating yourself with, Lena, and your collaging and your all that sort of stuff, like that's decorating darkness. That's working through it, that's decorating. But what's so cool about winter solstice is tomorrow it starts to get brighter again.
Yeah, because the darkness doesn't last forever. It's not.
That's right. And so here we are having this conversation on the longest, darkest night of the year. And I
Yeah.
just think like that is really cool. And I, for all of us, it starts getting brighter tomorrow.
Oh, thank you. That was beautiful. Ladies, this has been an incredible conversation. I learn so much every single time, and I just deeply appreciate you being here and being vulnerable, opening your heart and your mind and your soul and your stories. I know that people are helped by this. I know that I don't know what I would do without having heard all of the stories that I've heard. It matters. It definitely matters. And the takeaways matter because I want little crumbs. Just please, anything, somebody give me something to latch onto that can help. And I believe that all of these things help. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you for listening. We hope it meant something to you. Tell us your story, learn more about our mission, and support the podcast at www.pulledbytheroot.com.